Psychology is all around us. Psychological elements can be seen throughout our lifespan, from birth until death. Films have a wonderful tool to explain psychological theory and occurrences in our lives. Characters interact within each frame of film's psychological concepts. The films we remember most and view multiple times engage us by capturing the presence of these psychological dynamics in an authentic way. Without us even noticing through entertainment, films foster an exploration of psychology which has the potential to expand our thoughts as to what may be possible in our relationships with others, with ourselves, in our careers, in love, and in life. I invite you to join me, Dr. Catherine Marshall Woods, licensed clinical psychologist and film consultant, and my guest today, Craig Williams from Red Wall Productions, as we watch and discuss the best psychology in film. Craig Williams, how are you today?
I'm great, Kat. So great to be with you again.
Yes, I was so thrilled on season two of Best Psychology in Film that you were willing to join me. I was just so fascinated and taken by your work as a screenwriter, and I'm so excited to talk about your new production, Mechanics Rose, and you producing this film. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so Mechanics Rose came to me from a young writer-director. Well, I will say young writer-director. He's younger than I am. But he's a grown man with kids. And he has this beautiful story based on his experience with his mom, who passed away from HIV/AIDS when he was a teen. And, you know, those things shape you. And they especially shape you as a storyteller. And he came to me with this story. There was a producer's grant that was being offered. And he wanted to apply to the grant and he needed a producer. And he reached out to me on Facebook, of all things. And I don't necessarily always respond to them, but he just seemed so genuine and earnest. Just like a really nice dude. So I was like, all right, I read your script. And I ended up reading it. And he also, here's the key. He said, there's a part in it for your wife. I would love her to play the lead. And of course, you know, that's the key to my heart because my wife is an actor. And I was like, all right, let's see if this is going to work. And it did. And I loved his script. I loved his story. I loved his heart. And all right, I'm on board. And so we applied for a grant. It was $25,000 to make this short film. And we ended up getting it because his story is really beautiful. We shot it during the pandemic, which just had its challenges in Newark, New Jersey, which also has its challenges. And it was a great shoot. We had a lot of fun and we ended up with this really beautiful film, The Mechanics Rose, about a woman who escapes hospice care to make a treacherous journey across Newark, New Jersey to attend her son's graduation. And that's what she had.
Well, with that being said, why don't we take a look at the clip right now? We'll be right back.
If you be at the club, put your rent money in your pocket, spend the baby milk money, drink it till you vomit. You looking for an easy way because you can't.
You gotta get this alternator out or you're gonna have problems.
Yo, can you fix it today or not?
I'm gonna need a whole week or a day. You ain't the only one I gotta do.
Boy, you ain't learned that shortcut yet.
I keep telling you how to get it done faster.
Huh?
Get the quarter inch wrench and pull on that alternator without taking out the water tank. That'll get it out easy.
Mom, I got this, all right?
No, you got your balls in your hand and the wrench in the other. You keep fixing cars like that, you really would be all day.
Why did you leave the hospital?
Why don't you go get us some coffee? We'll have this ready for you in a few. Hey, you got cash money to pay for this job, right?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. I'm half and half. Two sugars. He's cream, one sugar.
Get out.
snappy this is. Anyway, we don't got time. We gotta go.
Ma, I told you yesterday on the phone I ain't going. I got so much more to do here.
It's Ralph's shop. He can finish it up. I'll talk to him.
I don't need you to do that. And I'm tired of you talking for me. Plus, you need to go back to the hospital. I mean, you look...
I look like what?
Just don't look well.
Time for this right now. What's more important than your brother?
To you? Nothing's more important than Golden Boy. I mean, it ain't the end of the world if we don't go. Besides, nobody wants the high school dropout hanging around anyway.
Booby feeling sorry for himself.
Stop calling me Booby. And I'm not feeling sorry for myself. I'm doing what I gotta do, and right now, I gotta fix this guy's car.
Damn it, Booby, you're so dumb sometimes. You ain't even got the right tool.
I got it. And I don't need you.
You really not gonna take me?
Since I'm so dumb and can't do nothing right, get there the best way you can. I ain't going.
So thanks, Ed. We're back. So one of the things that I notice most about this character is that she has such a love for her sons, even though it seems like the love that she has for her sons are very different and tailored to what she needs and what they also need from her. So the expression is very different.
Yeah, you know, it's I'm a dad and you're a new mom. And, you know, I have a teenage son. And, you know, what we want for our children is so strong in us. The future that we want for them, we want them to be healthy. We want them to be safe. Especially, you know, you and I have Black boys. So just feeling the pressure of the world. That when they leave our care, we want the world to take care of them. And that isn't always, doesn't always happen the way you want it to, you know, without getting too political. But that's a real concern. And I think it's her concern in the movie, which is she knows that her time is limited. It was in the full-blown AIDS crisis of the 80s and the 90s. And she, in real life, you know, she got the disease at the time where Black women were the number one recipients of the disease, and they were just, you know, dying and perishing. So she's got these two boys, and they are boys. They're like 17 and 20, but they're still so young in the scope of things, and she's got to leave them. And she wants them to be able to fend for themselves. And you don't always have the language for that. You don't always have the language for how to take care of somebody. You don't always have the language to say, I'm dying and I want you to be okay.
Right.
So that's essentially what the story is about. And I think it kind of translates, you know, just to all of us in real life, is that we know that our time is limited and we want to leave our children with all the tools to fend for themselves, to grow, to flourish. And it's hard because sometimes, you know, we don't always have the tools to do that.
That's right. I think one of the reasons why I wanted to feature this film on Best Psychology is because it really highlights the nuance of love, how a love for one person may be insufficient, or different the way that you will love someone else and what they need from you. And how for one son, it's encouragement, it's being there and leaving, as you said, escaping hospice care for this person to show that you are there. And then for another, it's being able to help this person be able to say, I don't favor this child because I treat them this way. It's, you need something else. And as a matter of fact, she's able to articulate, you're kind of like me in that way.
Yeah.
I can see myself in you, and I can see that I needed this. So maybe you'll need this too from me.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, part of being, you know, somebody's child is that you don't always listen to them. You're hearing them, but you're you're pretending that you're not listening because, you know, that's what we're going through right now. But I also just remember because, you know, we have one son. I'm a sibling, right? I'm an older sibling. And it was sort of the same. And it's one of the reasons that I was so drawn to this is because the dynamic was kind of similar. In terms of, you know, I'm the older one. I was the good kid. I was the one who got the good grade to, you know, got into very, very little trouble or was very good at keeping himself out of trouble, getting caught. So I was better at that than my brother was, who was 2 years younger. And, you know, parent teacher night was always just kind of great for me and not so good for my brother. And it wasn't now realizing that sometimes I felt ignored because she came home and she's like, good job. And she'd go right to my brother and just complain to him about what you got to do and you got to do this. And you got, and I'm like, but I'm the good kid. And it's just like, where does your energy need focus? That's right. It was what she knew at the time. She didn't know that she needed to sit and praise me and say, good job. And give me a pat on the, it's just like, you doing what you're supposed to do. So I don't need to talk to you. And I think that's the dynamic that I was so drawn to in this movie.
Yes. You know, you said parents don't always listen. They hear you, but not listen. And that's a whole nother show about psychology, really, and how that's a skill to know how to listen and to hear at the same time and then be able to change your behavior based upon what you're hearing, to be able to accommodate how to love. Gary Chapman has a whole book about it, The Five Languages of Love and how we accommodate individuals based upon how they need to be loved. And if we can do that, that makes for healthier relationships and more fulfilling relationships. When we struggle to be able to match a person's love, then the relationship becomes more conflictual, not because there's a lack of love or less of it. It's just how we demonstrate it may not match what the person needs.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. And I think, you know, those are the kinds of things that I want to capture in my writing, which is the real kind of stuff of relationships, of the dynamics of, you know, whether it's spouse to spouse or parent to child or child to parent. There's so much going on that makes stories really interesting and not just kind of surface.
Yes. So let's talk about your writing, because I have had the privilege of reading some of your scripts over the course of years, and I have always loved them. And in part, you know, I read a lot of scripts, and there is something I feel like has been so unique about your scripts in particular. You can say something in one sentence, and it is clear in mind what you're saying. I can see it. And usually I'm quite humored by it because just your sense of humor as well. And, you know, I always am just so in awe of your ability to do that. And one time I heard you talk about craft, and I'm wondering if you could share that with us today, because I think how you describe it is so important.
Yeah, thank you for that, Kat. I appreciate that. You know, it's hard work. I think, you know, there's what happens to a lot of writers is because we have access to TV and movies, and we're watching and we're ingesting and we're taking all that in. And you can think that that comes out fully formed. Like somebody just sat down one day and wrote an episode of Grey's Anatomy. No, Shonda Rhimes has been writing and writing and writing episodes and pages for years in order to get it to a science almost, where she can give like a two-page monologue in a minute. She knows what she wants to say. She knows what she's talking about. And she's rewritten it and rewritten it. And it is craft. It is knowledge. And it does take time. I mentor a lot of writers, and it's really hard for them to understand the waiting game. And not the waiting games in terms of what you are going to be able to accomplish, but the waiting game in terms of craft, that this takes time. It takes time to learn your voice. It takes time to learn what it is you want to say, but most importantly, how you say it. That is your voice. So it just takes a lot of writing the scripts, and sometimes it may not be until the fifth thing that you've written. You know, I've got writers, they pull that thing out of the typewriter. Okay, I'm old, so I'm, you know, giving the visual of pulling the page out of the typewriter. I'm done. It's like, no, it don't work that way, right? On your first draft of the first thing you've ever written, you're ready to get your agent and move to Hollywood and make your movies. Like, who's gonna give me some money? Nobody.
Right.
Because it's the craft that you have to work at. You got to get feedback. You got to get notes, which are really painful to hear somebody else's opinion. And I know you know this. You have to give opinions of somebody's writing. And they're just like, you know, they're clutching their pearls. Like, what you mean? This ain't the best thing since sliced bread. You're like, it don't make sense. It's missing this, missing that. I didn't understand this. This isn't work. Because the thing that is working in your brain about the story that you want to tell hasn't worked its way through you so that you can write it down. It's a process, and you got to just keep putting it through the process again and again and again until it gets to the point where, like, somebody reads that and they're like, oh man, I got it. I love that. And that takes time.
You know, it's interesting, as you were speaking, I almost was thinking, you know, individuals who are screenwriters or would like to be, maybe they can be able to think about this through a therapeutic lens as well. I mean, for a therapist, it takes time. It takes a craft to be able to say something to a patient in a specific way for them to have their aha moments. Right? You know, we could say it a lot of different ways, but we have to make sure that it's tailored for this specific patient to be able to hear it this specific time in their lives for them to say, oh, now I understand what you're saying. It's quite similar, actually.
It really is, because it does come down to specificity. When you are learning a person, learning a patient, and hearing them, you know, week after week talk about life, and you're exchanging, and, you know, however the therapy sessions are run, you as the therapist are learning more. You're learning, you know, what triggers the patient, what makes them happy, what kind of day they've had. And then you're just kind of forming this thing in your head. And it's like building a character, right? You're taking a little piece from here and a little piece from here. And then you've got a composite of this character. And now you know how they're going to respond in any given situation. So you can sit down after, you know, some time with the patient, and you know if what you're about to say is going to send them to a thing, send them to a space, right? But you want them to go there, because that's how you get to where you need in order for healing to happen. And that, for me, that's the same thing in writing. I got to work out all my demons, right? And don't get it twisted. It's my demons. I'm telling my story, however it comes out, whether it's a comedy or a drama. I'm working on me, right? I am the work in progress, but I'm taking all these pieces from people I've known and people I've loved and people that I've lost, and creating worlds. And the more specific I get, the better it gets. And that just takes time.
It doesn't just take time. It takes a level of vulnerability, really.
Yeah. You got to learn to be open.
Yeah. I'm wondering, do you feel exposed when you write and be able to give that then to the public to be able to either read or even see once it's actually a production?
Yeah, all the time. Right. But here's the great part. Most people don't know. Right. And it's just the medium that people think you made it up. And in essence, you've made it up and then crafted it so that it doesn't feel like you, even though it's you. So people think they're seeing a story about, you know, a boy whose family has died and he's got to save the universe. And, you know, that's Star Wars, right? But it really is about growing into your manhood. It's about finding yourself when you don't have the roadmap for it. And so how does he do that? Is you give him a task And then there's an obstacle, and then there's another task. And that's what we face in life. We face obstacles and tasks, and how we meet them is how we grow. And that's what I'm putting in the things that I write.
So, you know, one of the things that I also am aware of when it comes to your writing and where you are now in your career is that you've been an indie filmmaker for quite some time, and you're transitioning a bit into a whole new galaxy, since we're talking about Star Wars a bit, into maybe the Hollywood land. So I'm wondering what that's been like for you, how you're feeling about that. I see maybe you're clutching some pearls right there. So
it's like this thing that happens, like, oof. Yeah. you got that good psychologist eyes. You see those little traits that are happening. I've been an indie filmmaker for 20 years. So that means I get a project, I find money, or I make it myself, and I'm doing it. Right? There's nobody to tell me, yes, I don't have to wait for somebody's schedule. I'm in charge from inception to celebration. So and then just recently, just because of the way the world works, there was a lot of, how do you say this? come to Jesus moments in Hollywood about representation and about telling stories for people of color. And that happened after, you know, George Floyd's death, and just kind of that summer of 2020, where there were a string of, you know, Breonna Taylor and all the things that we know about, right? So what happened was people were looking at the landscape of TV and seeing that the stories they were telling were not being told by the people who should be telling them. So there was a reckoning in social media and also behind the scenes. They're still holding on, some people, but there has been an opening. You see just a lot more stories. So I'm like, okay, now's the time for me. I've got all these stories I've been telling, and it seems like people are responding to them. I'm going to go. I've had representation on and off for the years, but, you know, I had new representation. I was really specific about what I wanted to be, what I wanted to do. I had these TV pilots that I wrote. It was like, okay, these should be on the air. Why not? Why not me? And it's a lot of waiting.
So there's a different waiting game now.
Yes, it's a different waiting game. So it's waiting for people to read, waiting for people to put together for them to see themselves in your idea, which is still a little bit of a struggle, right? So there's development, right? Which takes a long time because I'm the writer. And I go to a studio, I go to a production company. Those people have jobs. They do day-to-day things. And in order to keep their jobs, they got to make sure that the investment they're making in you is going to be worth it, or else they lose their job. So they got to be real sure that you're not crazy, that you're good to work with, that this is a subject matter manner that is interest to an audience, that they can find an audience. So lots of people are weighing in on this decision, and that just takes a whole lot of time. And that can be a little frustrating for a person who's used to just doing it.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's, you know, the idea of changing your landscape of how you work after 20 years of being successful in doing it one way is such a huge leap, and also one that you can say, well, I'm hopeful I'll see the benefit of. Does this mean then you stop doing the indie films as you're waiting? What do you recommend?
Yeah, no, I don't stop. And, you know, one of the things that also that I decided, my wife and I, we decided because we were, it's our production company and it's our, things that we've been producing together over the last 20 years. There was a little bit of Hollywood wasn't accepting of that, but there's also, I had built a name and a brand, and to switch might've meant that I had to give that up because it is a different focus. And we were raising a son. we did not live in LA. We lived in New York, which has its own, you know, life and energy. And she's a Broadway actress who's done film and TV. So that would have meant that we would have had to take our whole lives and moved it cross country. And that just didn't feel right for me, you know, and for a couple of different reasons. I didn't see where I could make it and not have to start all over again. It just wasn't financially feasible for me to give all that up and start again. And, you know, this is also a little bit a part of me that I realize now that was a little bit scared because it's a big move and it's a lot to ask. So I stayed in my safe lane. And as our son is growing older and we're growing older, it's like, dude, it's either now or never. So never. So, you know, get off the pot. I cleaned it up. And that was a big part of it. So it's a whole lot of decisions that go into, you know, the changing your trajectory after what you've known or done for so long. And it still exists. So I still am an indie filmmaker. I still have corporate clients, which also pay the bills, which has also been, you know, very cool because I have a reputation and I've made a name for myself and ourselves in the business.
Yeah. So after 20 years of being able to rehearse and practice how to do the indie films while you're waiting for Hollywood in a different time too, where things are virtual and more that people don't necessarily need you to relocate and move, that you can still keep doing what you know how to do and you know how to do well.
Yeah. And that was a big part of it too. I mean, you know, sort of all the planets aligned terribly. There was this pandemic, which, you know, shut everything down for a minute. And as it was emerging, all those people that I would have had to be in LA to meet were in their homes or their second homes, you know, in New Hampshire or in Montana or in Baltimore. They were all over the place. And I'm getting meetings now with people that I would have had to drive across LA to get to. First fly across the country and then drive around LA to meet. Now we're just sitting person to person, you know, and their kids are in the background and there's laundry there. And, you know, people are doing like, oh, I'm sorry. Is the pool man too loud for you? I can hear him. It's like, no, I don't hear your pool man. You're good. So, and just really being able to relate to people because they did get vulnerable. In that time, because suddenly all that they knew was ripped away from them. So we talked about kids and we talked about life, and that's how you get to know people. And that was the secret that I learned during that was really helpful, is that these are real people. And for a while, they were the boogeyman. They were the Hollywood people that I didn't know. And this really humanized them, just being able to talk like this. That I was like, oh, y'all just people with jobs.
I've spoken to you numerous times. And one thing that this conversation leaves me with, Craig, is two things. One, of how much a person who wants to get into this business has to be willing to be vulnerable and expose who they are and themselves, and how generous they have to be with being able to share who they are with other people. And we know that's not always the most easy thing for people to do. There's a lot of fear that goes into that, and it is scary to do that. But in this specific domain of working in film, how necessary it is, because it hones your craft.
Yeah.
It dictates what you'll write about, how you're able to show it. So showing yourself is really critical.
It really is. It's just such an important part of this journey, because I got to work with you. And in order to be able to work with you, I got to know who you are, what you want, what your focus is, what your energy is, what you do well, what do your bad days look like, see if I can deal with all of that. You know, it's just like being in a relationship.
Yes. Yes. So that's exactly right. Well, Craig, thank you so much for coming back on. I can't wait to continue to be able to support you and through your work. And I hope to be able to see it in Hollywood as well. And of course, in indie film locations. And the fact that Mechanics Rose is on the film festival circuit right now, I hope people are able to see it, because it is a fantastic, fantastic film.
Thank you, Kat. I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm looking forward to some of those film festival responses, and especially for the our writer-director, Youssef Mays, who wrote a beautiful story.
He really, really did. Thank you so much, Craig, again, for coming on. I'll have to have you back because I didn't get a chance to talk about half the things I want to actually chat with you about.
You just have to have a longer show, Kat. I mean, you just got to know that.
We'll work on that. Thanks again for joining us for Best Psychology in Film. We'll see you next time. Have a good one.